Ashton Duffy. You were the producer, presenter and writer of Father Brown's Forgotten War, the story of Father Brown, the chaplain, the well-known photographer of the Titanic. But you discovered something of the more forgotten side, that is his war work. What struck you about the man as you researched and wrote that documentary?
I suppose, Pat, in the end, you know, there are two aspects to Father Brown. First of all, he's an intriguing character. There's no doubt about that. And I imagine sort of this 6 foot tall man had enormous energy and an enormous appetite and interest in many things in life. That's very clear from his photography and from his years taking photographs across Ireland. But even as a young man, I imagine the idea of him going on a grand tour, going around Europe, taking just magnificent pictures in that kind of street photography style. That's very interesting in a young man, you know what I mean, who's been brought up effectively by a bishop, and off he goes and he does all of this. So what struck me about Father Brown, first of all, his appearance in his chaplain uniform, if you like, a very athletic man, clearly a very, very strong man, and as I really discovered, an extraordinarily brave man.
Yeah, talk to me about his bravery, because I think one of the things I didn't realise and which came out in your film was he was actually injured very severely on numerous occasions.
Well, we know that he was injured, and, you know, badly enough injured for it to be recorded 5 times. The first time he experienced what's known as being hit in the face, which basically means he has been hit by a piece of shrapnel, for example, which would again tell you he was very near the action. The result of that was his jaw was fractured in a number of places, and it took many months really for that to heal. Now, his letters are interesting because the letters he wrote to the provincial, it's a man who's kind of pretending it's not as sore as it actually is. Do you know what I mean? And then gradually they realise that this is quite serious, and he mentions that he's having a bit of trouble. So he ends up leaving the front, and it's clear to me as well that he didn't really want to leave his men even then. And, you know, that wasn't very long into his war. That was in 1916. So, you know, he goes home and he's treated for that, and he ends up having to have expert treatment in Dublin. You know, because of this, the other injury.
But he wanted back again.
Well. Basically, then that caused me a lot of amusement later on in his war when he was, you know, kind of injured again. He was gassed very badly towards the end of the war, and that created all sorts of problems for him. Even when the war was over and he had left the Irish Guards in 1920 and he was back in Ireland up in Gardiner Street as the superior in Gardiner Street, he ended up leaving and going to Australia because his lungs were so badly affected. That's a substantial period of time after the injury. But he kind of wore his injuries lightly. What he didn't wear lightly was, as you say, that he was away from his men at the front. So, you know, at one stage, he's so desperate to get back to the men. And he's writing to the British authorities all the time. And in one letter, he says to the provincial, you know, this is just crazy. I am on strike with the War Office. You know, he just really wanted to get back to his men, because I actually think that being a chaplain in the First World War, this is my own opinion clearly, was one of those defining, significant parts of his life, but also of his ministry. Because while he may have gone to war as a result of, you know, sort of listening to, I suppose, the propaganda, if you like, at the time, and part of that, you know, was the Catholic Church, the Jesuits, John Redmond, the MP, saying, you know, we fight for Ireland through another, we'll get home real faster, this is a good thing. While he was persuaded, in a sense, to go to war because of all of those reasons, I think when he got there, this is my impression, he became so profoundly committed to the men, to their suffering, to their vulnerability, and to all of the issues that come up on a battlefield, and particularly that battlefield. I mean, most of the men, I mean, he was with the Irish Guards, which was a very established part of the British Army and an elite unit in a sense. But the majority of men who served in the First World War were volunteers. And when he was with the Dublin Fusiliers, most of those men would have been volunteers. So he was dealing with men who were under enormous strain, absolutely terrified, you know, been asked to go over the top onto the battlefield, and not really knowing if they were going to come back. So in the middle of all of that, Father Brown really is an extremely arresting figure because of the way he kept the men together, really.
Yes, the role of the chaplain is very interesting. He clearly loved them, even the fact that he wanted to go back, I think, at the age of 59 as a chaplain in the Second World War, wisely turned down by his provincial, would underline what you're saying about that sense of solidarity with the soldier. But those young men, I mean, you read some of the letters and they were heartbreaking. It was really moving in the documentary.
In terms of the men themselves, you know, it is very, very clear that in the midst of this awfulness of the carnage of war, because it was a battlefield, it doesn't bear thinking about amputees. I imagine young men in their teens crying out for their mother amidst the smell, you know, of gas and shrapnel and heavy artillery fire. Because remember, this was the first time that you had, you know, machine guns being used, cannon. Father Brown talks about, you know, a shell would have landed on their post, and he was at an aid post at one point every 3 minutes. The wounded lying there were wounded again. So you can imagine the fear of these very young men, a lot of them in their teens and early 20s, and they would have written home, you know, hoping that God would keep them safe and well. Their God became very important, whether they were true believers or not. Do you know what I mean? God took on a very central role here just to try and keep you safe. So there's You see that very much. And then you also see that, you know, the chaplain, one of the jobs of the chaplain would have been to write to the families of the bereaved. You know, that knock on the door that comes while you're sitting in your house in Dublin or Wexford or wherever. And it's the postman, and it could be a letter from Father Brown. And he really went to enormous trouble writing those letters. And he must have written thousands of them, actually.
Yeah, in very cramped conditions and beautiful handwriting.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he would have had at best a dugout, which would have been a pretty primitive hut in probably a rat-infested, mud-filled part of a trench, freezing cold probably, and he would have had a candle, I presume, to help him. Now, that's when he would be at the front. But a lot of those letters would have been written in the day after he had anointed the dead. There are descriptions in Rudyard Kipling's History of the Irish Guards in the Great War, in which you're aware that Father Brown is, you know, on the ground kneeling, consoling somebody who's dying. So that, you know, that sort of thing would have been part of his job. So his letters also show that he wanted to give each and every man dignity. And also he was very truthful. So he didn't have a, you know, sort of one shop fits all kind of approach to this. His approach was very much to give you the detail that he had, to be truthful, but in some way to be comforting. And the letters are all different. That's the thing that really, really struck me. We met the family of one man, a Private Owen Finlay, who died in 1918. So in the last year of the war, if you like. And it is very clear that the letter that they got from Father Brown, which is an exquisite read, is something that is absolutely cherished. I mean, this man, Fred Finlay, who was Owen's nephew, has a photocopy of this letter that he got from relatives in America. And it is a cherished possession. It is a cherished possession. He talked about, you know, reading the letter. He said, you know, you can just see the family all huddled around this letter, reading it again and again and again to try and get some sense of their relative who died, who basically died on the battlefield. I think he was an extremely brave person. He was a non-combatant, and yet he was at the side of the soldiers all the way through. And I think he had a profound belief in that ministry. And he took photographs as well. And again, this is the other thing. He was a photojournalist on the Western Front. He took shots of what was happening in the daily lives of soldiers. And, you know, as somebody who's in the 21st century in Ireland, I think that those pictures put flesh back on the bones of a lot of these soldiers, if you like, at a time when Irish people are beginning to retrieve the Irish soldier who died during the First World War and was forgotten basically because of the politics of our island and the 1916 rising and then the rhetoric of the new state.
And finally, one of those pictures which struck me, and you've spoken about it, is a group of men looking at a wounded, possibly dying soldier. But the soldier, the men are Irish soldiers, but the soldier looks to be German.
You see, I think this is the genius of Father Brown. I think this is possibly why he is compared to Cartier-Bresson, the French the father of photojournalism, in fact, who, you know, was doing these things 10 years after Father Brown was doing it. His pictures seem to tell a story. Each picture seems to tell a story. That is one in question, where you're looking and you see the sort of downturned face of the Irish Guards soldier. And as your eyes are drawn into the trench, you suddenly look at this uniform and it's not an Irish Guard. This is a German uniform. So the story here perhaps is that these men were basically helping out a German soldier who had fallen in no man's land. Totally consistent. As I found out in my research, quite often chaplains prayed for the Germans on the other side of the line as well. There are loads of pictures. My favourite picture is it's a silhouette of a soldier, bayonet fixed, and he's about to go over the top. And it's the uncertainty of that. I think it's that, it's the not knowing when you're in a war situation, these horrific, just horrible situations, and this man is about to basically go into the unknown. It's really quite an extraordinary picture.
The whole documentary is a really strong testament to the horror of war without actually showing an awful lot of battle footage, and I think that's a remarkable part of it. The poignancy comes through in the interviews, and people can see it on the Real Player for the next 3 weeks, the RT Real Player, am I right?
Absolutely, it's on the Real Player. If you go to the Nationwide website, which is www.rte.ie/nationwide, or if you have Real Player on your computer, you clearly just click into that and you can use the search engine to find it. But yes, it certainly should be there for the next 3 weeks, and maybe again later in the year.
Hopefully so. And also, for anybody listening, they can also get the book by Eddie O'Donnell.
How can I possibly do an interview and not mention Father Eddie O'Donnell, who was the reason that I, you know, really could do this, because he's done such extraordinary research on Father Brown. Again, Father Eddie has written many books on Father Brown, but this one is particularly special. It's called Father Brown's First World War. It's a fabulous read. I recommend everybody to buy it.
By Messenger Publications. Thank you very much indeed, Roisin Duffy.